Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. And once again, all the aftermath of the shootings in Tucson, but now the more political dimensions getting a lot more attention here in Washington, as well as in this podcast. And one of the things we talked about really on Monday, Jim, was that Sarah Palin seems to be the liberal whipping girl on this one, just because she had a map showing the target districts from the midterm elections. And somehow this shooter, who apparently has no affinity for Sarah Palin from what we know, or any political angle here whatsoever, nonetheless, she is being blamed for this in a lot of different circles. And finally, she came out with a video statement early this morning. We'll just play a couple of clips here and then talk about whether this helps her, hurts her, puts people back in line who have been accusing her falsely and that sort of thing. But here's just a taste of what the former governor had to say.
Public discourse and debate isn't a sign of crisis, but of our enduring strength. It is part of why America is exceptional. No one should be deterred from speaking up and speaking out in peaceful dissent. But less than a week after Congresswoman Giffords reaffirmed our protected freedoms, another member of Congress announced that he would propose a law that would criminalize speech that he found offensive. It is in the hour when our values are challenged that we must remain resolved to protect those values.
Now, Jim, those who don't like Sarah Palin aren't going to care what she has to say here. And she did have one statement that they seem to be jumping on, which we'll play in a moment. But after taking a few days to reflect on all this, it seems that in terms of talking about the strategy used by the left here, she pretty much hammered him pretty good.
Yeah, by the way, I want to wrap you over the knuckles, Greg, for continuing to use violent, inciting rhetoric by calling Sarah Palin a whipping girl. once again, there's just no place in our discourse for that sort of thing. You know, it's one of those things where I think she did – you really can't find anything to object to in much of what she's saying, except for one point, which I'll get to in a second. But I almost wonder what's the point, because you know that everyone who hates her – they're just going to react to this like a red flag waving in front of a bull and just go nuts and denounce it for everything else she said. We're trying to argue with idiots now. We are now trying to argue with people who are immune to facts, who don't care what the circumstances are, who don't care what the facts on the ground are, and who just want to denounce somebody. So I am rather skeptical. This isn't going to win anybody over, and I almost wonder if this was worth the effort. The one exception I said was that I mentioned earlier was the use of the term blood libel. And I find myself right now in a moment of strong disagreement with a lot of folks who I strongly respect, in that, you know, there are quite a few Jewish conservatives who are the term isn't sitting well with them because they believe it is a very specific historical context, i.e. this terrible lie that has been perpetuated throughout history of the Jews committing great crimes on other groups. I don't think that blood libel is some sort of like copyrighted term that can only be applied to this. I think basically you've seen it used, and I wrote about this on Campaign Spot, easily a dozen times in recent years, all in the context of making a false accusation that usually is in the context of murder or someone having blood on their hands. No one objected to any of those. And so the idea that, you know, Sarah Palin has committed some sort of great outrage here by using this phrase really doesn't sit with me, considering the fact that we have actual genuine outrages of, you know, burying 9-year-old girls going on. I think there are probably a lot of people unleashing a lot more fury at Sarah Palin and Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh than they ever are at the gunman.
And just for context, for those who haven't heard it, here's the clip that we're referring to.
Journalists and pundits should not manufacture a blood libel that serves only to incite the very hatred and violence that they purport to condemn. That is reprehensible.
Like you said, Jim, just a little while ago, while making a lot of excellent points, that it's obviously going to be the most controversial one, the one that the liberal networks and groups are already jumping on here. And it appears that now they'll try to slap an anti-Semite tag on her in addition to fomenting murder. So it's been an interesting week for the left-wing media and certainly for her trying to respond to this. And like you said, I'm not really sure what can be achieved by it, given that all rationality seems to have been lost by those trying to attack her here.
I figure a lot of listeners out there probably are in the sense of this has been an exhausting couple of days for just following politics. And each time you think it cannot get worse, it cannot get stupider, it cannot get more extraneous and knee-jerk and detached from actual facts, it gets worse. So, and that's our good martini, Greg.
Yeah, that's encouraging. Let's move on to the bad one now. And Bernie Sanders of Vermont is so far left, he's not even a Democrat. He's officially an independent, but he's an avowed socialist. Tuesday afternoon sent out a fundraising appeal. And all around the fundraising appeal and thanking those who have donated, he's talking about the shooting in Arizona. Quote, given the recent tragedy in Arizona, as well as the start of the new Congress, I wanted to take this opportunity to share a few words with political friends in Vermont. Also want to thank the very many supporters who have begun contributing online to my 2012 reelection campaign. Then he goes on to explain how basically, if you're not a Republican in Arizona, your life is in danger if you decide to express a political opinion, saying that some of those members of Congress who were in close races and many of whom lost were the target of threats. And even John Roll, apparently the federal judge who was killed, appointed by a Republican president, was also the victim of right-wing hate speech here. So well done, Bernie Sanders, going completely off the rails.
I wonder how much when we see unbelievable behavior on the part of elected officials, how much of this is the bubble effect, that the idea that they are in a bubble and probably 90% of the people they encounter are either telling them what a great job they did, boss, or asking for a favor and thus being very nice to them, and very rarely telling them, you know, pal, you're really full of it. And it's kind of one of the reasons you see this, the shock and horror at the town hall meetings. Clearly, it's never crossed Bernie Sanders' mind that this is an utterly terrible tragedy and an outrage to our country, should not be right next in the next sentence to, please give me money. You just don't do that. But if no one ever corrects you, then I guess anything that just pops into your head becomes normal and acceptable. And if it seems like a good idea to you, it's acceptable to everyone. This would be like running commercials during the memorial service. The idea that nobody around Bernie Sanders or in the concept of putting together that email had the audacity, you know, had the guts to say, you know, Congressman, maybe we don't want to put these two messages in the same missive to readers. You know, it just strikes me as a depressing statement on the thinking up on Capitol Hill these days.
Certainly troubling on a lot of different levels.
And that's the bad martini. We should just call it the bad martini, the even worse martini, and the I need something stronger martini to finish this all off.
Exactly right. Well, if we need a little bit of levity, there's always the French, and that's the third martini today. But it's President Obama meeting with President Sarkozy at the White House this week, and the French have had a difficult week. A couple of French nationals abducted and eventually killed in the African nation of Niger, I guess is how we pronounce it. So the president talking about solidarity with the French people is a somber moment, but at the end of his statement, this is what came out.
We don't have a stronger friend and a stronger ally than Nicolas Sarkozy and the French people.
Not the worst statement he could have ever said, but kind of bizarre given that we're supposed to have this very special relationship with Britain, apparently one that was special until the non-formatted DVDs got exchanged and some other insults along the way. For the French, it wasn't that long ago that they basically thought we were evil incarnate over the Iraq war, and we were pretty much saying going to war without France is like going hunting without an accordion. Seems to be a rapid improvement of relations here that I wasn't aware of.
What is you know, the difference between Jacques Chirac and Sarkozy, and it's worth noting that he mentioned Sarkozy as, you know, America has no better friend. Sarkozy deserves praise, no two ways about that.
Sure.
Would David Cameron or any other, you know, a couple other leaders kind of, you know, raise their eyebrows at that kind of statement? Sure. What I think is probably what we're seeing here, and it's a bad habit of many politicians, and Obama is not alone in this, is you get caught into these catchphrases or just familiar phrases. And among them, we have no better friend than fill in the blank. And whoever in front of you at any given moment is the best friend you've ever had.
Hmm.
I think my favorite example of this is Obama saying, we will not rest until. And I just, you know, remember doing a Google search on all of his speeches and finding we will not rest until, you know, and easily like 9 different promises. And so somebody, I posted that and somebody observed, no wonder he always looks exhausted. And obviously, look, often he'll say that before he goes on vacation. Often he'll do that before he goes to a DNC fundraiser. Clearly, he's going to rest before problem X gets solved, but it's just a familiar phrase designed to rally public support and, boy, isn't this problem important, and boy, aren't we determined to go fix it. And so, you know, should the British be too upset by this? Probably not. I don't think this represents any major serious policy shift or you know, change in the way America sees the world. But it is kind of lazy phrasing on the part of the president, and probably something he should try to avoid Although past evidence suggests that not really the word choice he should have used in these circumstances.
Yeah, like you said, probably not the best word choice, probably not going to have any lingering impact, just kind of an interesting flare-up in his meeting with Sarkozy earlier in the week. Jim, we'll talk to you tomorrow. Have a good one.
Looking forward to it, Greg. See you.
Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us next time for the 3 Martini Lunch.